It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bejarano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bejarano. Joining me on the show today are respiratory therapists Sarah Campbell and Michael Erickson. And today we're going to be discussing a relatively new program of Good Shepherd Healthcare System out of the home medical equipment retail outlet called the Rural Respiratory Program. If you have any questions, give us a call at 541-567-6500. Sarah and Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick.
So to help get us started, what exactly is the Rural Respiratory Program?
Okay. The Rural Respiratory Program is a program that is designed to allow respiratory therapists to go out, see patients in the comfort of their home instead of them coming to us. What it does is we go out there, we assess them, we check their medications. It's quite an extensive interview on our first visit, typically lasting about 2 hours, where we kind of go through A to Z, and we're really just there to listen to the patient and try to create a game plan to help them manage their chronic respiratory disease.
Thanks, Michael. So how did the program actually get started?
Well, I'm the guilty party there, Nick.
All right.
I heard about it at a convention a couple of years ago, and it seemed to make sense. Our manager, Sid Rittenbach, managed to catch fire. He was like dry tinder, and I was really excited about it. And we worked around it and worked around it. It took us about 11 months to get a plan in place where we could go ahead and start seeing patients and make a difference in their lives. The hospital has been very, very supportive. And in fact, one of the first questions we're usually asked is, well, what's this service going to cost me? And the answer is nothing. It is a community service by Good Shepherd Hospital, and we're very, very proud to be part of it.
Wow, that sounds pretty amazing, to be honest with you. So I have a question for you, just kind of related to respiratory conditions in general and the prevalence of them in our community. So what kind of, you know, in a typical situation, you made it sound like you spend quite a bit of time with patients when you go and do an assessment with them. What kind of conditions are you actually treating?
So the most common conditions that we're going out on are typically our COPD patient population, which refers to chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. We also see asthmatics, we see people who have pneumonia. We see anyone with those respiratory diseases where they're chronically usually coming back to the hospital because they don't know how to manage it. Mm. In Umatilla and Morrow County, it's estimated that about 14% of the population has either asthma or COPD, which is quite a large percentage when you break it down. So that's there's a lot of people out there that have respiratory illness that require someone to come out there. And as you get older, it obviously becomes more difficult. You're getting more and more meds, and sometimes you don't know which medications to use and how to use them, or no one's ever shown you. And that's kind of what we're there to do, is just kind of help them progress and manage their lifestyle better, not just their respiratory illness. But there's a lot of things that we see when we go out to the house that also need to be addressed. We're addressing a lot of those socioeconomic factors that a lot of patients struggle with.
Wow. So it sounds like you guys are doing quite a bit. I know that most of our listeners probably understand to some extent what respiratory therapists actually do in the hospital setting, but you kind of explained there that you guys do quite a bit more than what you would typically do in a hospital setting in the home setting.
Yeah, that's correct.
So how does that differ? I mean, you explained a little bit, but walk me through a typical patient appointment, an encounter. What would that look like?
Well, we would make an appointment, go out and see them. I typically like to get to know them a little bit. We visit about the kids, the grandkids, the dog, what's going on in their lives. The idea is to feel comfortable and, you know, to get to know one another a little bit so that you'll open up. We do a spirometry in the home, which is a test of lung function. We measure end-tidal CO2. A lot of people are used to putting the little thing on your finger to see how your oxygen's doing, but a better measure of how your breathing is going is actually what your CO2 level is coming out. Hmm. And so we monitor that along with oxygen levels. We also have a nifty little device called an N-check. And this is what we use to train people how to use their puffers, their discus, their, you know, for the various medications that are out there. There is a different technique required for every medication. And with this little end check, we can set it and be able to do, to simulate an Advair discus. We can simulate their albuterol MDI and make sure that they're using the proper amount. One patient that I had as an example had been on a drug called Anoro for 2 years and was adamant that it wasn't working and was going to stop taking the drug completely because didn't feel any better. And we got the end check out and tested it and found out, well, her sucking it in was doing really good, and she probably could have put out a fire sucking on it, but that was way too hard for the drug that she was taking. And so inside the throat, we have the epiglottis, which is pressure sensitive. When you have too much pressure, it closes over the trachea, so nothing goes into the lungs. That's why we don't choke. When we talk about something going down the wrong pipe, it's because of a malfunction in the epiglottis. So I explained this to her, tested her, and put her on the trainer, and we finally got it. She did her first treatment, and everything was great. And she goes, I could feel the difference. And I said, yeah, when it goes in the right place, it works. She had been, her spirometry findings had said she was a moderate to severe obstruction. Mm. 3 weeks later, having used the Anoro correctly, she had normal spirometry.
Wow, that is incredible.
We didn't do anything other than train her how to use what she already had.
Wow, that sounds really exciting. You're listening to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System, and our topic today is the Rural Respiratory Program at Good Shepherd Healthcare System. If you have any questions for Sarah or Michael, please give us a call at 541-567-6500. For those of our listeners that may be struggling with the conditions that you mentioned just a little bit ago, how can they go about joining this program?
Yeah, one of the things that they can do, there's a couple routes they can do. They're more than welcome to give us a call, and we'll get their information, and we'll send it off to their provider or their primary care physician or their mid-levels that they go and see. A lot of times what happens is patients go in and we have physicians who are already aware of the program, so if a patient mentions it, then the doctor will fill it out and send it to us. And sometimes the doctor is the one who initiates that and says, hey, I think you could benefit from this program. So there's a couple of ways that patients get enrolled into it. We also work really closely with our community health workers and the community paramedic, who also help identify patients who they think might benefit from it and let us know, and then we will send the referrals out to that way.
Our home health and hospice program is also giving us referrals now, because they go out and see patients that are homebound, and sometimes the doctors forget that those, because they have home health, that they possibly need to have some respiratory care as well. And so we have already started receiving referrals from them too.
Mm-hmm. So this reminds me kind of a healthcare buzzword that's going around right now called social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you guys, together with all of these other groups within Good Shepherd Healthcare System, are working together collaboratively to address essentially some of these issues.
There is a lot of need in our community. I, quite frankly, was surprised, because normally speaking, we see people when they come into the store. We get just a very, very tiny slice of their life, just like when they go to the doctor gets a tiny slice. Mm. When we go to the home, we get a more rounded picture and can, you know, can help with a variety of things. It's not just the respiratory. We are an underused medical professional. We have within our scope of practice, everything we do is within our scope of practice as respiratory therapists. We're not going out lone rangering it out there or anything. And we keep very close tabs with the physician or provider. We give them our chart notes every day when we go out. We send them our chart notes. We are open to calls from the provider. If it's something that we're really concerned about, we call the provider and say, hey, let's do something.
You're absolutely right, Nick, that there's a lot of collaboration going on. And I want to point out that we don't only collaborate within just the Good Shepherd world. We're collaborating with outside of Good Shepherd. We work with Mirasol, we work with Morrill County Health District, we work with St. Anthony's Hospital to try and, because right now no one is doing what we're doing and they don't have the capacity to do what we're doing. No one else is in this, anywhere pretty much west of the Mississippi, is sending respiratory therapists into patients' homes to be a guest in their home. Usually the way it is patients come to us and they're guests in our home, if we think of it that way. And, you know, there's a lot of things that happen when you're in a guest at someone's home. You know, a lot of times they're nervous. You know, we talk about white coat syndrome, where patients, you know, they see a doctor and their blood pressure spikes and they get really nervous and sweaty and those type of things. Well, now the role's reversed. Now I'm going into the home. They're calm. They're relaxed. I'm able to identify a lot of the issues that maybe they're afraid to bring up with their doctor. Maybe their doctor doesn't realize that they have this type of thing going on in their life, and I'm able to help address that in a personal and a calm and a nice manner and a non-judgmental manner. Because me and Sarah both, we're just trying to do what's best for the patient. We're not there to judge. We're not there to criticize. You know, if they smoke, we're there just to encourage them to quit. We're not going to yell at them and be like, you need to quit smoking. It's going to kill you. Yeah, it's going to kill you. But yeah. We're not going to hammer you on it. Yeah. We'll say, hey, there's some resources out there. When you're ready to quit, let's talk about it. You know, and a lot of times that helps patients relax, because instead of someone saying, we need to talk about this, we put it on the patient. Hey, when you're ready to talk about this, let's talk about it.
We're ready. Awesome. So you kind of mentioned that your service kind of expands into Mora and all of Umatilla County. So what does that boundary actually look like? Because that is quite a large territory.
You just named it.
So is it as large as?
As Mora and Umatilla County.
Wow. So as far as Heppner up to Milton to Ukiah to, yeah?
If it's in Umatilla or Morrill County, we will go see those patients.
That is incredible. So let me ask you this then. We talked a little bit about your patient population and what the conditions that they have. So what age groups do you actually care for?
Well, a baby with RSV needs respiratory support just as much as a senior with COPD. We're happy patients or parents who have a baby that's had RSV, which we're coming into that season, or has asthma. May be a little frustrated on how to utilize the meds they have, how to care for the patient. Our goal is to help people be aware enough of the conditions and comfortable enough with their ability to care for them that it will cut down on the number of emergency room visits, that they don't have to run to urgent care, that they can wait until tomorrow to see their doctor. We work with a lot of patients who have transportation issues, who have just issues on understanding, and we found that a lot of the population thinks that the emergency room is a substitute for their provider. And this is a problem, because then when someone who really needs the emergency room comes in, it's being clogged up with someone who is just getting a treatment. And I know through the 7 months that we've been active with the program, now we have several patients that we have helped. They've felt comfortable enough to call us instead of heading straight to the emergency room. And we can go out and assess them. In some cases, we call the PCP and say, you got to get them in right now, you know, or they're going to the emergency room. A lot of other cases where we've managed to calm them down, when you can't breathe, your anxiety level gets pretty darn high. And if it's your child who can't breathe, it's even higher. And so we're there to comfort and inform and to help out with that.
And it sounds like to me that you're also helping to reduce the burden on other healthcare services. You mentioned the emergency room, you mentioned urgent care, and, you know, as an organization, I know Good Shepherd is trying to help people understand when they should come to the emergency room. So it sounds like you guys are able to kind of head that off at the pass, essentially, before they actually come in and help, you know, reduce that burden of that expense on those patients, which is pretty incredible as well. So as far as, you know, just I can just see the need and hear the need. Do you guys work after hours? I mean, how does that actually work? Are you on call?
Technically.
we do work a lot because there is only two of us serving
a lot of people.
It's both Umatilla and Morrill County they're big counties. There's a lot of space in between places that we go. If we have to work longer, that's what we do. If we have to come in earlier, that's what we do. You know, that's again, we're trying to do what's best for the patient. If me not being able to go out till 5 to go see them on their first visit, I know I'm probably going to be there till 7, you know, and that's just the reality of it. But I'm going to do what's best for the patient. And if 5 o'clock's the only time I can see them, that's when I'm going to see them. And our manager is very supportive of that. He's a very strong advocate of doing what's right for the patient. And that's what this boils down to. Good Shepherd is doing what's right for our patients. And that's really important for people to understand. We want to do what's right for them. And this is a way for us to do that.
Awesome. And Sarah, I know that you mentioned to me, you told me a little story about a patient who had called you kind of in the middle of the night one time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I had a patient who he was an oxygen patient and required some extra support. He was also a BiPAP patient, had a lot of multiple health problems, was wheelchair bound, had help during the day, but at night he was alone, and he had a dog who needed to go out. The dog's name was Bear. Hi, Bear. Bear, I gave them my phone number, at my personal phone number, because I knew that there was going to need to be support. Well, frequently we got called at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd go out, and the real problem was that Bear had gone out and run off in the middle of the night, and he couldn't get out to find the dog. And I would typically take one of my daughters with me, and we would go and scour the neighborhood looking for Bear, bring him back and get him tucked up in bed, and then go back home. He later moved on to a skilled nursing facility and had some problems. Well, he still called me rather than the nurses in the facility, called and had me listed as his emergency contact. You know, and so I had paramedics calling me in the middle of the night. You're the emergency contact for this guy? And I was like, yeah, I've already been there, you know, and back. So we get involved. Some of my best friends are patients.
Awesome. So, I mean, that is really incredible, and it sounds very selfless, and you guys are actually involved on a more personal level than what some of our other healthcare workers can be, and it's just not that they don't want to be, it's just kind of the mill of what healthcare is and the duration that they have to be able to fit enough patients in during the day. So how many patients can you guys actually take? Because, I mean, there's two of you, and it's such a big territory. What does that actually look like?
Looks like a lot of running for us. We drive a lot.
We drive a lot, yeah.
You know, some days, half of my day is in Pendleton, and then I head up to Irrigan, and my other half of the day I'm spent in Irrigan. Typically on a day, depending on how many new visits and how many repeat visits we're doing, it would be about 4 to 5 patients a day.
Each.
And we each work 10-plus hour shifts a week, so we each have one of the days off during the week. But we're servicing quite a bit of patients every single day, trying to go out. And
about 180, 190 patients we figure we can do justice to at a time. And of course, as we go out and visit, then they fall off because they've graduated.
Sure.
You know, they still know they can call us anytime. I have one patient who enjoys the service so much, she went back to her physician and asked for him to renew the order. You know, so even though she's doing really well, it was renew the order. We also work with a school in Portland that trains, the Concord Career College, which trains respiratory therapists and sleep technologists. And we've been working with them and on the curriculum advisory committee with them, trying to train new respiratory therapists to come out and want to do rural healthcare.
Wow.
This is actually becoming a career track for therapists that they could engage in.
In the home.
Mm-hmm.
That is incredible. Wow. So I guess the question, you kind of brought it up a little bit, but a typical patient, what does the duration look like? Do you guys see them on a daily basis? Is it a weekly? Is it a monthly? Is it a quarterly? Or kind of all of the above?
Yeah, typically,
as needed.
Typically, like I said, the first visit is about 2 hours long. Our follow-on visits are usually around an hour. Depending on their severity, we might see them in a couple days. We might see them in a week. We might schedule them 2 weeks out, what is nice is we both travel with our laptops, and we have a hotspot that we're able to connect. So we're actually able to schedule right on the spot when we're done with the patient, And we're able to say, okay, hey, you know, based on what you're telling me, I think I want to see you next week, just so that I'm kind of keeping a closer eye on you. Or if you're really sick, hey, I'm coming out in 2 days, I want to check on you. Typically, our visits, we usually do between 4 and 8 home visits, depending on the severity of the patient. If they're a very sick patient and they're needing our services, we're going to be out there a little bit more. If there's someone who just kind of needs us just to kind of get them on the right track, then it's going to be less visits.
Okay. And I guess that, like you said, after you start getting them on to the track and they start improving, then your duration
starts to spread out. It's about 8 hours of FaceTime per patient over a period of, could be months.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what are the long-term plans for this service?
No, that's a sneaky one, Nick. Well, we'd like to see it expand. We see a fleet of respiratory therapists going out and servicing all of our population and being able to help them, expanding our providers' reach. You know, we are the eyes and ears of the providers in the home. And utilized properly, it really helps them. We have Dr. Abelay out in Irrigan, who, fantastic. If you come in with a hangnail and cough, he's going to send us to see you. And that's just a given, because he wants to make sure there's nothing more serious going on with that cough. Because, you know, a lot of times when you go to the provider, you make an appointment, you go, gee, I have an infected hangnail I need to have seen. Yeah. Okay, that's what you get to see the provider for on that visit. You don't go, oh, and I've got my spleen is hurting and my ear, I've got an earache.
I've got this cough.
Yeah, and I've got this cough that's been going on for months. You know, no, you get to see him about your hangnail.
Right.
And so he has been very proactive and going, oh, gee, I don't like the way that sounds. Hey, guys, would you go out and check him out? Yeah. Maybe it's nothing, maybe it's something. And so he's really utilizing us the way we'd like to see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they are chronic patients. Sometimes they just had a little cough.
Yeah, and I want to just reemphasize something. It's not that Dr. Abelay or any of the other physicians or providers don't want to see patients for those things. It's just that there are so many other patients behind them waiting that they just don't have the time to be able to spend hours with that one patient.
And that's where we come in. We can be that extension. We can do what they can't take the time because of time constraints and other patients who are waiting to be seen.
And I guess just for our listeners to kind of understand too, and since this is a relatively new service in our area, I'm sure that there's kind of benchmarks and goals or outcomes that have occurred, you know, from the vendor that you had listened to that provided the service. So what do we expect the outcomes of your encounters to be with your patients? What are you really wanting to achieve with them?
Overall population health improvement. Yep. I mean, I cannot think of a single patient that we've gone out and visited with and taken care of that hasn't had an improvement in their quality of life, in their health, in their understanding, and in their compliance with their doctors.
Awesome. So they become better patients,
essentially.
And they become more in charge and in tune with their own healthcare.
Yep, absolutely. The patients definitely start, you can see them wanting to do better because of the fact that we're there kind of being that little shoulder that they can lean on if they need that. We have patients all the time who call and say, hey, can you come see me? And that's that kind of that trust that we try to build up. And a lot of that is because we start off as guests in their home and we end up building that really that patient-provider relationship that everyone always wants to talk about. How they have these great relationships with their patients. And when you're only spending 15 minutes with the patient because you have 12 patients behind them, it's really hard to build those relationships up.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of sick people in our counties. And those providers, they want to have those relationships, but they're not really able to because they're just so busy. So we step in and we can provide that relationship and act as an extension of that provider and keep that provider in the loop. And now the provider feels like he's more involved in what's going on or she's more involved in what's going on with their patient. Because after every visit, we write up a chart note and send it to the doctor and say, hey, this is what we're seeing. This is what we recommend. This might be stuff that you're not even aware of is going on in their house. Mm. And we can... And that, so the next time, I mean, we've had providers tell us, hey, I'm calling that patient in because I'm concerned about some of the things you've written. And it, had that never have happened, the provider would not have that relationship, that better relationship. Now they're coming in saying, hey, the provider is now being proactive and saying, hey, I'm seeing stuff on these chart notes. I need you to come in. I want to talk to you about it. Hmm. And then that improves that relationship with the patient, because now they know that together with the three of us, we're working to manage their health better.
Awesome. So you guys become that
Marcus
will advocate.
Be MD.
Yeah.
doing the house call.
Absolutely. Wow, that is incredible. So I guess my last question for you guys, and you both can answer this, but as the service continues to grow, what is the ultimate goal?
For me, my ultimate goal and my own personal goal is to continue growing this program. I would love to see this program expand not only in our counties, but throughout
statewide.
The region. I know what we're doing is right. I know what we're doing is improving health. COPD is a very sad disease. A lot of people don't care about it. They say, oh, it's their fault that they have it. Mm-hmm. Well, the reality is that's most of the time, yeah, sure, some of it is their fault, but not all of it is their fault. There's genetics that play a role. If you're a firefighter or you've been a farmer and you've been exposed to a lot of these chemicals working out at Hannaford, a lot of those things, besides smoking, can cause COPD. But as soon as someone gets labeled with that and someone's like, well, you smoked one cigarette, that's why you have it, they blame the patient. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to create that understanding that they don't have to be lonely. They don't have to feel like no one is not managing their care or helping them or just pushing them to the side. What I want is kind of the same support that diabetes gets or that cancer gets or that AIDS gets. And if we talk about a lot of those diseases, a lot of those can be lifestyle choices too, you know, but yet we still embrace and support those people. Mm-hmm. But yet when it comes to COPD, we don't have that same support and embrace. And so my ultimate goal is to make it to where it is a disease that people actually care about and want to help people. So that would be my personal goal on what I would like to accomplish.
Very noble. Thanks.
You know, this is my, I'm at the end of my career. Mike's more towards the middle of his, but I'm at the end of mine, and to leave this as a legacy behind and know that it's going to be well taken care of and that the community is going to be well taken care of is really, you know, it's really important. I was asked by a pulmonologist one time, what's the main reason that COPD patients exacerbate and wind up back in the hospital? And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I knew it was a trick question. And I sat there and I said, loneliness. And he goes, you're exactly right. He goes, when you are lonely and cut off from family and friends and unable to do anything, you stop caring about yourself. You stop caring. You stop taking care of yourself. You stop taking care. You exacerbate. You're in the hospital. You've got respiratory therapists coming in every 4 hours. You've got the nurses coming in. Family comes running in because, oh, gee, mom or dad's going to die, you know, because you're in the hospital and everybody's there and you're happy. And you feel good, and that's a good thing. And then they say, okay, 3 days later, they say, okay, you're better, go on home. And you get there, and the kids go, okay, well, you know, try to do better. You did it to yourself. You know, you shouldn't have smoked. You should have taken your meds. You should have done this. The family goes away. There's nobody coming in to see you every 4 hours. And you get lonely, and you re-exacerbate and wind up right back in the hospital again because that's the comfortable place to be. You know, you're going to be taken care of. Depression is a major part of COPD. Loneliness is a major part. And having held the hand of many, many COPD patients as they have passed away, I'm here to tell you, it's the saddest way in the world to die. It really is. And if I can't make a change in that, and I'm an ex-smoker, I'll be proud and own up to it. I'm an ex-smoker. I may be having Mike come out and teach me one of these days because just for the company, of course, but but you know, it because that is could be in my future just as much as it is for anyone else. I want to make a change in how we view it.
Awesome. Very, very encouraging, very noble. Thank you guys for sharing. Sarah and Michael, I want to thank you both for being on the show today. If you, our listeners, are interested in learning more about the Rural Respiratory Program, you can give them a call at 541-667-3477 or give them a visit at the Good Shepherd Home Medical retail outlet located at 435 Northwest 11th Street in Hermiston.